Well, good morning and welcome to the February 18th, 2020 meeting of the Chelan County Public Utility District Commission. Today's meeting is a both study and business session, with a study session starting this morning at a little after 10, and the afternoon business session will start at 1. We welcome public's input at all of our meetings and remind you that these meetings are recorded, that if you wish to address any item on the agenda, we ask that you come to the microphone, please state your name, address for the record, and limit your comments to 3 minutes. Today we have all five commissioners present, General Manager Steve Wright, General Counsel Eric Walquist, and we have Teresa Boucher acting as the Clerk of the Board. This morning we have Lyle Moore with us, and Lyle, would you please join us in the Pledge of Allegiance and also a safety moment?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Morning, Commissioners. My name is Lyle Moore, Supervisor for Customer Service Engineering. Today, I wanted to talk about our physical hearts. Our hearts work hard for us nonstop our entire lives. Unfortunately, since our hearts are inside us, they can fall in that category, out of sight, out of mind. And when that happens, our hearts do not get the attention that they need. Consequence, a devastating consequence of that is heart disease. Since February is National Heart Month, I wanted to share 8 ways to show our hearts some TLC. Number one, make time for sleep. Focus on good quality sleep. Number two, know what your blood pressure is. Limiting salt, favoring healthy eating habits, managing stress, and increasing physical activity helps lower blood pressure. Number three, clean up the diet. Choose leaner meats, limiting processed foods and sugary drinks. Number four, find out if you have diabetes. Test your blood sugar and manage your numbers. Number five, move more. If you're doing nothing, do something. If you're doing something, do more of it. Number six, think beyond the scale. Ask your doctor if your weight is okay. It's not, work on it. Number seven, cigarettes. Smoking and secondhand smoke are bad for your heart. Number eight, do more of what you love. Spend time with people you are close to. Talk, laugh, confide, enjoy each other. And in closing, remember, making changes takes time and effort. Think about progress and not perfection. Think 1% better each day. Your heart's future and yours will be.
Boy, that's pretty good, Lyle. Good. Let me tell you. Good. You made me feel bad about eating that big piece of carrot cake yesterday. Thanks, Lyle. That was good cake, though, I got to tell you.
It had carrots in it.
Oh, man. Well, there you go. Thanks. I can see better today.
Did it have some walnuts, though?
It did.
All right. Cream cheese frost?
Of course.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Lots of it. Yeah. Okay, the commissioners this morning, we have a consent agenda. Any item on the consent agenda is subject to transfer. Any request of a commissioner? Commissioners?
Based on staff recommendation, I'd like to suggest we move items 9, 10, and 11 to the consent agenda before we, at this point.
I've heard a motion. I hear a second.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to find my number here. There's one I just wanted to hear a little bit more about, and I believe it's Resolution 9. Clear? Yes. I'm sorry, Resolution 10, if you don't mind. I'd like to leave that on the regular agenda.
Okay.
9 and 11?
It's 10.
But 9 and 11 would go to consent.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Nine
second.
Consent. All right. Is there a second?
Second.
So moved and seconded. Any discussion? Hearing no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, the ayes have it.
Thanks.
take over? Okay, so for agenda item 3, this is a resolution establishing new rates for the district sale of electric energy, water, wastewater services, and wholesale telecommunication services. So Lindsay Mons will be presenting again. I would say, in general, we're not planning to repeat information that's been provided in many, many board meetings over the course of the last couple of years. We'll do a short summary of the resolution. And I think, in particular, we have not received any public comment since the last meeting. So we've really focused on implementation dates. So that's, Lindsay will be covering that.
Thank you, Steve. Lindsay Mons, Business Manager and Customer Utilities. Good morning, Commission. The resolution you have before you represents your final approval or consideration of the path we've been on with strategic planning for the last over a year. In addition, the last month or so, month and a half, meeting with you specifically on these rates. During that time, since our last meeting, as Steve mentioned, we've received no additional public comment. There's been some social media discussions amongst the public, but as far as direct communication to staff, we've not received any additional comment there. With your consideration of this resolution and approval, staff would begin the process of programming and testing, and this process does take a fair bit of time. So with that, taking that into consideration, we are proposing to have an effective date of June 1st for our water, wastewater, and fiber systems, as well as our residential electric. Those, we feel we can tackle that programming and testing in that amount of time, and we would propose deferring the commercial, industrial, and other rate schedules on the electric side until December 1st to give staff some additional time with the new CIS system to really make sure that those are the best that they could be. Following this, in each subsequent year, we propose that the rate schedules be effective on June 1st for all classes going forward. Other than that, there should be no changes within this resolution beyond what we have discussed in public before. And I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
I'd like to add one more thing. So we're now 1 week into implementation of our new customer information system, and happy to report that so far it has gone smoothly. Haven't run into any major problems. Having said that, I always keep my fingers crossed on things like this because things can still pop up. And so these are the dates, assuming that we continue to have a smooth implementation of the CIS that we think makes the most sense. But I want to put the caveat out there that we continue to need to make sure that that's our number one priority, getting our billing system producing accurate bills. As long as that's going good, then the rest of this is easy.
Commissioners, any questions, comments, thoughts?
If it'll, in this process of that implementation, it was determined that we needed to bump that implementation date later, what's the process that we would go through to do that? Is that to redo the resolution or?
We would come back to the board and amend in some fashion the resolution to set different target dates.
Because the date is included in the resolution.
Correct. At this point. It will establish them until and unless it's amended by the board.
Got it. Thank you.
But that's not a typical process. It's just a matter of bringing it back before the board. Yeah.
Yes, it is not a typical process. And if it was to delay implementation, we would not have to go through any of our notice provisions or anything. We simply amend the date to adjust the effective date or adjustment date.
Good. So I'm real happy. I'm happy to see that we are including the residential electric in the overall rate increase soon, so that it's all done at once. And I understand the need to delay industrial and commercial, but so that's great. Happy to see that. Thank you. Good work, Lindsay.
Thank you.
We might just check to see if there's public comment, although I don't know that we have public in the room, but I can't see everybody behind me.
We'd open it up at this time for public comment. Seeing no public in the audience and hearing no public comment, we'll move on.
Okay.
We're ready for the vote.
Yeah, I would move that we adopt Resolution 3, which is a resolution establishing new rates for the district's sale of electric energy, water, wastewater and wholesale telecommunications services.
I'll second the motion.
So it has been moved and it has been seconded. Do we have any discussion, commissioners? Hearing no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? The ayes have it.
With that, I would like to just add one other quick comment that while we have no public comment today, we've had a lot of public comment through the process, through our customer survey and elsewhere, and so we appreciate the comment that we received and feel like we're in a good place in terms of acting consistent with the comments that we received and the strategic plan that was adopted by the board.
Steve, ballpark, how many comments? How much?
Justin, help me. How many? Over 3,000.
Just good to have that figure. Good. Thank you.
And it might, so the comments have all come together in consideration of this resolution. Is that correct?
Yes. Yeah, and into the development of the strategic plan that led to this resolution.
Perfect. Thank you.
And would you say that most of the comments are positive?
So the comments I'm speaking of are the comments that we received through the strategic planning process. The most recent series of comments were very very limited relative to the rate planning. But yes, so the comments that we received overwhelmingly in strategic planning were in favor of small incremental rate increases versus delaying rate increases and putting a risk of needing substantially higher increases down the road.
Great. I want that to be on the record. Thank you, Justin.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Gary, I just have one thing to also add. Yes. With Commissioner Conan's comments, that I just really appreciate the process that has gone into this whole process has been very, I think, exemplary and well thought out. A great deal of time taken, a lot of public input, and I just want to express my appreciation to staff and to Steve for the leadership to implement a great process. And I really appreciate that. So, thank you.
Well, and I'm going to jump on that bandwagon and also do the same. This has been a very lengthy process. It took a great deal of consideration. It took a great deal of time. It took a great deal of staff effort to bring all the pieces together, to get this right, to take into account all of the comments, and to take the time and effort to do the outreach, that energy that was spent to get to today, to get to the point where we can feel comfortable with the decisions that we're making as a board. It didn't happen quickly, but it happened carefully, and that really is the key to me. Is give this careful consideration, listen to comments, listen to what people are saying in the county, take all of that into consideration, and arrive at a good outcome. And I feel comfortable that we have done that with the help of staff today. Thank you, everyone.
Good. All right, we're ready for agenda item 4. This is the annual update on the audit committee report. Stacey Jagla will be presenting.
Hi there, Stacy Jagla, Internal Audit Manager. As Steve mentioned, I'm here to give the Audit Committee annual report to the board. You should have that document in your packet. Our board representatives for 2019 were Commissioner McKenna and Commissioner Arsenault, who we will also have as our 2020 representatives as well. Looking forward to that. In your information, the quarterly meetings that you'll see that we have themes that we talk about as defined by the charter, and those are financial statements and external reporting. We also have enterprise risk management presenting, updates on district risks, compliance, our system of internal controls, and lastly, the internal audit activity and external auditors talk to the audit committee as well. Internal audit reported on the following audits in 2019. We had one, a governance review, and that was with our IT business systems. We had three compliance reviews. It was generation energy isolation or lockout tagout, Hydro Power Research Institute did that under review, and also our Rock Island Powerhouse 1 rehab quality and inspection program. We reported on those to the audit committee. The committee also heard from the state auditor's office the results of their 2018 accountability, the 2018 I-937 renewable energy audit, as well as the district financial statement auditors. PricewaterhouseCoopers reported on the results of their 2018 audit. All the external audits provided clean audit opinions for the district. It was great news. And lastly, the key focus areas for internal audit in 2020 are we're going to look at Lake Chelan and Rocky Reach license settlement agreements. We'll be taking a look at our cultural, historic, and hazardous materials compliance program, as well as our fiber service billings and new portal internal controls. So any questions on the meeting summary for the audit committee this year?
Commissioners, any questions, thoughts, comments, feedback for?
I sat in for, I guess, Gary. Yeah, I sat in for Gary in the last meeting. Yep. It was great. I always learned so much. I'd forgotten. It's been several years since I've been president, so I haven't been able to sit in. Thank you. It was great.
Thank you.
Any other thoughts and comments?
Nope, other than a clean audit, it's a great thing.
It is. It is. Yeah. It's good news.
Just appreciate it. Yeah.
I also want to remind for the other commissioners that don't sit on the audit committee, you also have access to the audit committee SharePoint site with a list of all of the audit reports at any time. If you want to go and take a look at those and have questions, you can let us know, and I'll send out the link later on today just for your convenience to have that handy again.
Great. Good job.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Stacey.
Yeah. Next up, we've got the quarterly energy resources update, and Jan Jaspers will be presenting today.
And Janet Jaspers, Energy Planning and Trading Manager. So, we were here back in October, so I'm going to mainly focus on changes since we were here in October. As we go through this, but feel free to stop and ask any questions. What we're going to cover today, just going to take a look at the overall wholesale portfolio, going to take a look at some pricing updates and net wholesale revenue forecast, and a quick market update. Kind of key points that we have for this update. Good news is our 2019 net wholesale revenue came in $7.7 million above budget. We did have some retained surplus proceeds on a long-term hydro contract, and we also had extra revenue on our real-time agreement that more than offset lower revenue because of lower stream flows and a lot of unit outages. So our energy resources team is really monitoring several things, resource adequacy, kind of short-term markets and carbon policies. And one thing that I kind of wanted to bring to your attention is all of the California ISO and the energy imbalance market and this extended day-ahead market. And so we've been actively engaging, and we're really trying to advocate for market rules that fairly compensate hydro for all of the services that it provides. No major transactions since October. And, this chart shows the energy commitments of the district for 2021 through 2025. And we do have a couple of notes on here since last time. As you can see, some of our sales are actually above this solid red line, which is our hedge max. And so we have gotten approval from the Power Risk Management Committee to do that. And those are some index price sales, which do not introduce any price risk to the district. And staff is in the middle of kind of a new look for this reporting and possibly breaking up energy price sales versus fixed price sales.
Janet, before you move on.
Sure.
So I looked at this briefly at home, and I am just trying to read hedge max, the hedge minimum and the hedge max. So the hedge max represents, well, help me with that. What exactly are we looking at there?
With our hedging policy and kind of our expected surplus on an annual basis, we have a maximum how much we can sell because we don't want to go out and sell way more than what we have. So the top red line is our max hedge target. So it's really just a limit to say, oh, you can't sell above and beyond that point. And then just the same, we have a hedge minimum target, which is that lower solid red line. And so we need to sell at least that amount. So we have to stay between the red lines and how much we sell on an annual basis.
Yeah, so I follow that, but how that overlays on the that bar graph with, you know, which breaks it down, of course, on what the different, I don't understand how that overlays onto that.
Okay.
Is that significant that it?
Let's just take 2025 for an example. And so in 2025, we have approximately 900 average megawatts already hedged out in load in Canadian and Thailand long-term cost plus slice. And so kind of at the top of the blue line, the pale blue line. And so that has to be above this lower red line. And if we switch to 2024, we're about 1,000 already hedged. And so that's kind of right in the middle of where we're, our max and our min limits are. And so I think what this first note goes to explain is in the years 2021 and 2022, we're actually a little bit above and beyond that max hedge target. But we have already gotten kind of a waiver from the Power Risk Management Committee was an exception for those years, just because those were some index deals and they really didn't introduce any additional price risk. If you were
by index deals, but let me just add to that what Janet is saying is that we get paid the market price, and so we can purchase to cover. By purchasing at the market price, and then we get paid the market price, so there's no risk associated with that sale.
It's a wash.
It's a wash. Our choice is just whether we choose to purchase put a contract in place ahead of time or a few months ahead of time or even day ahead, but the price we get will always be the same price that we're going to pay. So we're covered on that. And that's what makes that. That's, as Janet said at the beginning, we've been thinking about a different way to present this information. Because it you could look at this and say, well, you're over your max target there. Well, we're over, but only by an amount equivalent to this index sale that we've got that doesn't create risk for us. So it's not introducing risk above and beyond our risk appetite.
That helps me.
Yeah, there's a lot to that. I mean, usually bar graphs. Usually graphs are really easy to follow. And this one, I get it now. But thanks for the explanation.
And the dip on that in total the ability to generate in 22 is due to our large rehab program. Uh-huh. Right.
All of the unit outages, and you can see as we get units back in time, our expected surplus is increasing. On slide 7, we have our market-based lease contracts, and there is no update since we were here in October. Natural gas. I think this is where we've seen the biggest change since October. Natural death prices for March 2020 Henry Hub contract are actually down 54 cents. Really high inventories, robust production, and a mild winter all kind of combined to contribute toward this price decrease. And if you look at kind of over time, we're really at a historical low down here since 2002 for the same 2020 March contract. Moving on to the forward electricity prices, along with the gas declines, we're also seeing the forward price curve decline over time. And so with this, the prices, I think you can see them down here, these lower prices, the gray, are really at budget time on November 6, 2019. We locked in kind of budget. And then what we have currently are the black. So the black numbers up here and the black line. So from budget time to now, for an example, in 2025, we've dropped close to $3 for a flat price. That mouse is super sensitive. I'm sorry. Okay, and we're on the table for the summary of the net wholesale revenue and other energy-related revenues. Due to we had about a 77% of normal flow at Rocky Beach, which was almost tied for the third lowest on record since 1962 when we kept started keeping records when Rocky Beach was built. And so, and we've had many unit outages, but those were really offset by a long-term power contract retained surplus. And then also we had some extra revenue on our real-time agreement. And so we're kind of net-net. We are $7.7 million higher than budget. Then this chart is just showing the net wholesale revenue and off-system in-use sales forecasts. So when you're in we were here in October. You saw this dashed blue line. It was black at the time. And our current forecast is this solid black. So you can see in some of the years it has actually increased here in 2023. I think that was due to a load forecast adjustment. And then out here where we're unhedged in 2026 and 2027, we've seen a net wholesale decline of the forecast.
Jenna, can I ask a question
sure.
on that last slide? Do you have a graph or data that might look backwards, just a couple of years? Because what this is a forecast. It would be helpful if you go back 5 years, let's say, and you say, here's what we forecasted, and here's what actually happened. So it's a validation of the forecast model looking forward.
Yes, so back in 2015, and I'll have to dig that up what it was. I think that I can get that and send it out to you.
Okay, thank you.
So, two things I would say about that is which forecast, because we do quarterly forecasts.
So what I'm trying to look for is apples and apples.
So here will be my answer for you. You will not find validation. the market is really not that good at forecasting what the prices will be. That's the struggle that we have all the time, is that that things happen and surprises happen in the market. It's the best available information that we have, but I wouldn't want to lead you astray to think that you're going to find graphs that look similar to each other.
And I think the significant market changes, just the amount of renewable, some of the regulation for the clean energy. And so there have been some big changes that really are affecting our forward price curve. And I think most of those are applied downward pressure on the forward price curve.
And you can see that just in terms of all those other lines are just other forecasts.
Right.
So the forecast is moving around pretty substantially, even just in the course of the last year. It's moved around quite a bit. We went back 5 years and we were looking at the variety of different core forecasts over that 5 years. You'd see a wider variation even in terms of what the actuals were compared against what was forecast at different points in time.
So does that mean the forecasting is getting better? We're getting better? Or what does that mean if there's a wider...
The closer you get to the event, we're better.
It's like predicting weather, probably.
Stick your head.
That makes sense.
So, Janet, so you said renewables, and what was the other thing you said is causing downward pressure?
Natural gas prices.
Oh, yeah, right. Okay, thanks. Yeah, wow, that's they're unbelievably low. Mm-hmm. Have you seen them that low, like twice in your career here?
I don't think so. We're trying to get to how long I've been here.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah. So, I think back when I started, probably $2.50, $3 gas was pretty typical, and then a $4 gas was typical. And then you can see kind of during that whole energy crisis, we saw very high gas, and it's really come off over time. And I think just to me, a lot of some of the renewable regulations really are putting downward pressure on it, and fracking, so a couple of kind of major changes.
And now we're in the front edge of potentially being poised for another fundamental change with the shutdown of the coal facilities and the Clean Energy Act.
I remember being at a conference, I think my first year as a commissioner, it would have been around 2008, where one of the speakers predicted that you would never see gas prices below $8.
Yep.
You know, and then just watch this over time. It's like,
impossible to predict.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. That was a good segue into market information. And so kind of the theme of this slide is these cheaper natural gas prices really driving down power prices over the last decade. And so we have some statistics here. So basically what it's saying is power prices will have declined about $8.30. $7 can be attributed to lower natural gas prices, and $1.30 of that decline is really attributed to renewables. In California, really the increased solar generation has a disproportionately large impact on pricing. And I think something that we're really going to have to concentrate on and put a lot of time and attention to is some of these negative real-time pricing. And this last bullet just explains that the Southwest Power Pool they saw negative real-time prices 20% of the time in the year 2017. Wow. On this line, it's basically talked about Southwest Power Pool beginning reliability coordination services. And it's going to start up Feb 2021. Several entities in the western U.S. are signing up for it. And here's just the summary of today's presentation.
And I just want to add one more thing. So I've mentioned to the board before that we would be filing comments on the CAISO governance issues. They released a paper in January, and those comments are due on Friday. And we've been putting comments together. There are others as well. The Public Generating Pool will be offering comments, Public Power Council, so there's generally a variety of Northwest comments will be pretty aligned with those, but probably a bit stronger with respect to explaining the why there's a governance is such an important issue and concerns that we've got there. So we'll be out, I think it's Friday.
I just have a technical question. Maybe somebody can answer it. You know how on your iPhone you can do a screenshot and then it's saved in your photos? Can I do a screenshot on this iPad Pro? How do I do a screenshot?
We'll get the help desk to.
Really? Okay.
Yeah, but it's actually just, yeah, it might be able to help you during the break too.
Yeah, just did it. I think we
just did it.
What is it? This and that?
This and this and the one on the
left. On the left?
On the left.
Although it went to what can I help you with?
Go to your pictures.
Hold on. Okay, I'll figure it out. Thank you.
Yep.
I knew it had to be something there.
Thank you.
No?
I think at this time, we're going to deviate just slightly from our normal morning business session or study session, and we are going to be going into executive session. We will need how much time?
We're going to take all the way till noon.
We'll need until noon to be in executive session, and so at this moment,
we will have to read the reasons for executive session.
Yes, thank you very much, Eric. I appreciate you very much. Thank you for reminding me to do that.
Well, I hesitated given the length of the paragraph and thought maybe that appreciation would be diminished in some.
Well, I did note that last night when I was putting my things together. So, we are going to go into executive session to discuss with legal counsel agency enforcement action, litigation, potential litigation to which the district or its board is or is likely to become a party and or legal risks as authorized by the RCW to consider the selection of a site or the acquisition of real estate by lease or purchase when public knowledge regarding such consideration would likely cause an increase in price as authorized by RCW, and to consider information regarding the infrastructure and security of computer and telecommunication network security and service recovery plans, security risk assessments, and security test results to the extent that they identify specific system vulnerabilities persistent to the RCW. Boy, that's a mouthful.
Thank you. My apologies.
We're coming out of executive session. It is February 18th, 2020. No decisions were made. No votes were taken. Any additional business to come before the commission? Hearing none, we shall stand adjourned for lunch. Right. Ready? Welcome to the February 18th, 2020 business session of the Chelan County PUD Commission meeting. I'd like to remind everyone that please silence any electronic devices that you may have brought with you today. And since we place great value on the public input at all of our meetings, and since these meetings are recorded, if you wish to address any item on the agenda, we ask that you please step forward to the microphone, please state your name and your address for the record, and if you'd be kind enough to limit your comments for 3 minutes until someone else has had an opportunity, everyone has had an opportunity to chat. So we are as we come back in, Steve, I'd like to turn it over to you.
I think we're going to move to the consent agenda, and as I understand it, there may be a change to the consent agenda.
Yeah, just to get things started, I'd like to move that we approve the consent agenda with an additional addition of resolution number 10 being approved as part of the consent agenda, which would make resolutions 9, 10, and 11, all three part of that.
All right. And
second.
We have a second. It's been moved and seconded. Do we have any discussion? Hearing no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? And the ayes have it.
And if I could just add, because Josh Mitchell is in the crowd, Commissioner Congdon, what we'll do is when we're finished here today, just make him available to you, and you can have a conversation with him about that particular contract.
Thank you.
Okay, and with that, we are ready to move to the regular agenda. So that would be item 12, resolution approving the purchase and sale agreement with Scott H. McDougall for the purpose of real property and authorizing the general manager or his designee to complete the transaction. Dan Frazier is here. Commissioners, we did present this at the last board meeting, so we're not going to repeat that presentation. We did get some input from one customer and raised a couple of interesting issues, so we thought Dan could describe that. It'd be valuable for all of you to hear some of the issues that were raised. I will say that particular commenter did say he supported the moving forward with the purchase of the land, but there's still some interesting issues to address there. So, Dan?
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you, Steve. Morning, Commissioners. Dan Frazier, Director of Assured Services. So to recap, it's a purchase of about a quarter acre
And there are no changes in the purchase and sale agreement that was proposed at the last, that we talked about the last meeting. We did receive one comment, and as Steve mentioned, he was supportive of the purchase in and of itself, but had some concerns that this raised up. One of them was the vacation of Horan Road. He was also concerned about how the service center interfaces with the waterfront property, the riverfront property itself. And I think that's really important that we can show that we're going to be a complementary use down there. It's not going to be an industrial part of town you don't want to see. So we're talking about getting together with that individual to help him understand what we were really looking at for the site, how the site is being developed. Now, this, if you recall, this also allows us to continue on our permitting process with the city. And so we told him we would keep his comments in mind as we went through that process. And for the public portion, we are at this time, we issued on Thursday our determination of non-significance through the State Environmental Policy Act, SEPA. And so that is out for a two-week comment period. We may get some more comments along these same lines because it does talk about our use specifically in the shoreline area. We also supplied our application to the city of Wenatchee on Friday the 14th for the what's called the shoreline conditional use permit. Again, it's another public process. We will expect to see some comment potentially coming through the same issues around the shoreline area. And this what this does is allows us to use part of that 200-foot shoreline buffer to site part of our site itself. And then we talk specifically about the trail. And how the trail would be the primary use of that shoreline area, providing access to the river. One of the concerns that the commenter brought up was the use of Horan Road for a potential eventual widening of North Wenatchee Avenue. And this is something that the city has looked at a little bit. They don't see a great use of that, but we'd like to also talk to him to help him help understand, you know, what his concerns are and see if we can maybe even get him connected with someone at the city who could further that discussion around North Wenatchee Avenue extension. So it all kind of centers around so much happening in that area at one time, Confluence Parkway, our project, a lot happening down there. So we want to provide some certainty if we can to the public that we are really coordinating our efforts with the city and everyone else involved.
Dan, can you just take a second and speak to the one of the other additional concerns was access to fishing. And there was a belief that there was free access and free passageway to the river on that road. And can you, just for the public, so that this is recorded, bring clarity to that?
Absolutely. There is a 10-foot easement from the southern terminus of Horan Road to the fishing easement itself. And so we found that in the fishing easement. It's kind of buried in a subsection of the easement. But that provides fishing access only to the – it was a game department easement that was recorded back in 1964. And so physically you can't use that access. It's a vertical kind of one-to-one cliff down to the river. But people have been accessing that fishing easement as they've been trespassing on neighboring property because that actually offers the additional kind of a flatter access to the river. So one of the things we're contemplating is providing a real access to that fishing easement through our project. And that's something that's very important, is to provide a true public access, not just a fishing access, kayaking, you know, boating, just water access. That would be a true public recreational access.
Thank you. Good. Any questions, commissioners? Comments? Thank you.
Thank you.
We're ready for the commission to vote on item 12.
Right. Mr. Chairman, I move that we accept Resolution 12 as presented.
Second.
It's been moved and seconded. Commissioners, any comments? No discussion? So they're hearing no discussion. All those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? The ayes have it.
Okay, we've got some manager items. I want to start with Ron Slaybaugh, on our regional water update.
Good afternoon, all. Ron Slaybaugh, Water and Wastewater Manager. This has to do with the East Wenatchee Water District, of course, being a member of Regional. They approached us in the city of Wenatchee, and they are updating their comprehensive water plan for submittal to the Department of Health. and they have requested to add about 1,000 acres to their service area that is currently outside of the boundary for the regional water rights, the regional system place of use. So this change would require that all three members of regional unanimously agree and update the regional contract and also update the regional water system plan. The regional water system plan was last updated just last year in 2019, and there was an analysis done there, the capacity and the water rights for regional for both a 6- and a 20-year period. And the population at the time served by regional was about 77,000 people, anticipated to increase to 96,000 people by 2036. And that's within all of our collective service areas. Regional at that time, the analysis, pretty conservative analysis, indicated regional had adequate capacity and water rights to serve through 2036. We did look at just briefly the impact that adding that 1,000 acres could have on regional's capability, and quite frankly, it's very small and immeasurable. There will be, of course, additional homes that can be served at build out, but it isn't anticipated to significantly change the population projections that will be served within East Wenatchee service area. We also looked at the potential impact to the East Bank aquifer, and you might recall hearing in the past about some issues associated with temperature and our ability to meet our hatchery interests, our hatchery obligations. And again, any potential impact to East Bank is small. And our hatchery folks have performed additional modeling and work on the East Bank aquifer and filled it through just pumping strategies and such that do have some tools available in the toolbox to mitigate any temperature impacts associated with pumping, regional and hatchery pumping from the East Bank aquifer. So based on all this, staff does recommend that we agree to East Wenatchee Water District's request with a couple of conditions. One is that any cost associated with updating the regional comp plan be borne by the East Wenatchee Water District, and also the cost to have regional's attorney update the contract, the regional contract, and work on the place of use for that water be paid for by the East Wenatchee Water District. And ultimately, we will have to come back to this board because, as I mentioned, this all has to be agreed to unanimously by all three entities. So we will come back with a resolution to approve that change to the regional contract.
Just looking down the road, maybe even further than the 2035 time frame, and it's been several years since I've been our representative. I know Gary is right now to the regional. Dennis was before me, if I recall correctly. Do we have a mechanism in place that recognizes that growth may occur unequally throughout the region and how the overall cost structure is put together based on potential future growth?
Only in that as a member uses more water, they pay more through their regional wholesale rate.
Okay.
So over time, the percentage that East Wenatchee Water District pays has been going up. East Wenatchee Water District and the city use roughly the same amount of water right now, and then the PUD, of course, uses the least amount. We're just under 25%, 22 to 24%, with the remainder is 40-some percent, give or take, 40% or 39% each being used by the city and East Wenatchee Water.
And we all maintain our own infrastructure.
We all maintain our own infrastructure.
Well, the mechanism is in place. I mean, it's based on usage.
Sure.
Yeah.
So the 1,000 acres are not necessarily residential.
There's 945 acres. You're going up Grant Road towards the airport, get to about Nile. It's up on the hill behind Briarwood.
Okay.
There. And that's, there's some terrain associated with that. So it would be residential, but not necessarily high density.
High density.
It'd be some higher view lot. Yeah. And then there's 70 or 74 acres that's out around the 6,000 block of Batterman, and I'm not exactly sure how that's zoned.
Okay, yeah. Because I was just thinking of the number of apartments that are being built in Wenatchee and East Wenatchee are probably higher density water use than that 1,000 acres with low density. So,
yeah, for sure.
I think in terms of, if I can answer just maybe kind of looking around the corner and answer one of Commissioner Smith's questions as it relates to second source and the cost of second source bringing in the digging, the pipes, the all that, which was a discussion at the last water board meeting. How do we proportion that? And that's going to be a discussion that we'll continue to have. I know the mayor is made the comment that the city wouldn't benefit, and so I think he's looking at it from the standpoint of, well, what's the benefit to the city to pay their whatever percentage would be. So we're gonna that's a wrestling match that I think we still have to approach. Yeah. And that would be a fairly large estimated dollar amount, at least the one when we were down by Rock Island Dam, just the rough estimates that were being kicked around were, what was it, $60 million?
Yeah, 50.
$50 million to bring it up from Rock Island Dam to City Wenatchee limit. So that's another topic that will be brought back to our board at some point.
Ron, I'm going to catch you by surprise a little bit, but we've talked about this a bunch. Would you just bring the board up to date on the pump storage project and on the Douglas County side too, the conversation that's occurred there?
Okay. There was it GridFlex? It's a group that invests in trying to develop pump storage projects throughout the states. They found a potential site over in Douglas County up on the shelf above the airport there. And their project would build two open water reservoirs, one up high and one down low with the powerhouse down low. I believe they stated the amount of head, the fall was about 1,600 feet. Yeah.
Of course, the power getting it up there is big too.
Sure. So, of course, with pump storage, they look to generate power when prices are high and turn around and utilize energy off the grid to drive pumps to pump that water back up to the reservoir when prices are low. They approached Regional just to ask whether it would be possible to get some Regional water for their first fill of that, which was 3,280 acre feet, if I remember correctly. In comparison, Regional delivers about 11,000 acre feet annually to customers right now. And it's certainly possible, and the reason why GridFlex has an interest in this is their understanding is if they use groundwater to source the initial fill, they don't have to go through FERC approvals, and they can get approvals for their project locally. So they still have some work to verify that that is indeed true. But they met with the regional members and gave us their pitch, and we didn't have a hard no at the time and just shared with them some of the obstacles. One is the water rights place of use that would have to be dealt with. And, we don't know the answer to that right now. That would take some work. And where they would look to get the water from would be through East Wenatchee Water District distribution system. And there would be some work, some updates to that distribution system that they'd be responsible for. So we were able... didn't tell them no, that there's some obstacles, but we might be able to work through them. And it was enough for them to continue with their feasibility to see if it's something that's even worthwhile for them or not. And they'll go through the next round of that over, it didn't specify a period of time. It could be a few months, it could be a year or two before they get back to us with some more information.
Ron, was that Grid Plus or Grid X?
Grid Flex.
Oh, Flex, F-L-E-X.
Thank you.
That's what I could remember off the top of my head.
That was good. That was enough. Yeah. Right on, Laura.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ron.
Thanks, Ron.
Next up, I want to invite Michelle Smith to come up and provide the board an update on Confluence Parkway, an MOU they're working on with the city of Wenatchee.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. Michelle Smith, Director of Hydro Licensing. I wanted to apprise you of a couple of updates on the Confluence Parkway project and our participation in the city of Wenatchee's proposal to run and align that parkway along Confluence Park. So two things. One, we have just completed an MOU with the city of Wenatchee. Mayor Kuntz and I will be signing that MOU, but basically that spells out how the Schlamm PUD and the city of Wenatchee will be working together through their environmental assessment process. That process will take about 2 years, so it's going to be a lot of work, and we wanted to make sure that Schlamm PUD staffs and our participation in that was well understood by all parties. And so a couple of important pieces on that is that no way will Schlamm PUD staff be involved in doing the studies or basically going out and conducting the environmental work. We will, however, be given at least 60 days notice in terms of reviewing the documents, the study scopes, and any other information that pertains to the outcome of that work. What we're trying to do is make sure that any potential FERC involvement later on, that the effort that they're going through in this environmental assessment will comport with our requirements under FERC if we have to do an amendment or a change to our license as a result of the parkway going in. So we have given them, through this MOU, all of the information pertaining to our FERC requirements, which, as you know, are pretty rigorous standards, a lot of community outreach and stakeholder involvement. So in the MOU, it spells out a communication plan requirement that is approved by the PUD that comports with our requirements there. So along the lines of that, I also wanted to alert you to a community public meeting that the city has scheduled for March 5th. That's a Thursday. It'll be 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. at CTC. And that was per our recommendation because what we wanted them to do was basically talk a little bit more with the community about the different alignments and how they ended up on this particular alignment. We also wanted to get more community input on the proposal. And we wanted them to give the community a little better idea of the schedule and the process that's involved with this environmental assessment work, including the types of studies that they plan to undergo in the next couple of years. So all of that is spelled out in the MOU, and then they will be going through some of that schedule and get some community input on March 5th. Lastly, I wanted to bring up one other feature to this, which I think is very important. And I know that they're hoping to get federal funding through the Federal Highway Administration for this project. They're going to be going out again. The city of Wenatchee is going to be going out again to try and get funding this year. If they get a grant and get that kind of funding, it raises the bar of the environmental assessment to another level. Department of Transportation Act requires that they go through a Section F assessment because it's a park and cultural and actually wildlife area. So it just means that there's even more aggressive review on the environmental end of things than under the normal environmental assessment process. So I think that's good for Schlamm PUD and for our community because it assures that there'll be a fairly rigorous attention to the environmental impacts, mitigation, if things can be mitigated. And certainly at Schlamm PUD, you know, that area for us is recreation and wildlife and habitat mitigation for our license. So we'll be looking at this very closely.
Good. Any questions? Good.
Yeah, Michelle, can you describe for me where the proposed road goes in relationship to McDougal's Packing, the north end of the park, and the pedestrian bridge?
Yes, that's a great question, Commissioner Bolt. Basically, the current proposal This is changing as we discuss this more and more with the city of Wenatchee. But currently, the city is proposing to purchase the McDougal properties. I think they're in discussion about that, and then push the roadway back along that area.
Okay.
So what we're looking at now is a proposal that basically on the north side of Wenatchee River, there wouldn't be any, I shouldn't say there wouldn't be any, but there'd be a very small amount of park impact. And we're even looking at moving the pedestrian trail that goes across the river right now, the bridge, maybe even of putting that together with the roadway possibly underneath so that we can have less impact to the Wenatchee River in terms of the number of piers in the river. And then it also would help the PUD in the long run because that pedestrian bridge right now when we get high river flows, we know that in the next 20 years we will be needing to do some work there. So there's a lot of discussion yet, but right now it looks like they're going to push. We've been asking them to, and it looks like they're trying to do plans to push that trail as far away from the park, more to the west, if you will, through the McDougal property and not along the park edge.
That, your answer is really helpful.
We're looking at a map of it, Dennis.
Yeah, because I keep looking at it.
Yeah, I think that's all on their website currently.
Yeah. Yeah, just keep looking at it in terms of current residents, current occupation, and just figuring out, like, where is that thing going to go? So that really helps.
How'd you get there?
Appreciate it.
Let's see.
I went to maps.
Yep. And then?
Any other questions?
Where we are.
I think not. We're just looking on maps to make sure we understand the pathway. And it's probably going to change again a little bit. You just tweak it.
The city of Wenatchee's website is very helpful. They have a lot of good information on there now. So they have, I think, the proposed route, the most current is
on. We're not looking at theirs. We're just looking at a generic map.
Generic rendering. I went on their site last week, and I noticed that they did put the more current rendition on there. So if you wanted to go look at that, it would have that drawing.
Michelle, I'm assuming that there'd be at least discussion or identification of possible need to pass underneath that roadway and connect our two pieces of property, that part of the discussion.
Yes. There'll be a lot more discussion, very early thinking on that. I'm just kind of making the point that we're still looking at a lot of alternatives, trying to come up with the best approach that meets everybody's needs.
Yeah, great. Well, thank you. You got your hands full there.
Yeah.
Thanks a lot, Michelle.
All right, you're welcome.
Thank you.
And we'll try to keep the board informed as of these public meetings because I think that that probably is your best vehicle for understanding what's going on in that process. Next up, I want to invite Justin Erickson and Justin Fletcher to give you an update on Tumwater Dam.
Now I recognize it.
Good afternoon. Justin Erickson, Managing Director of District Services, and joining me is
Justin Fletcher, Civil Engineer.
Well, we last talked about Tumwater before you in December of 2018, and at that time, you might recall, we were going to do some exploratory drilling along the piers of the Fishway to determine on the composition underneath and try to make an assessment on what we thought would be could be a series of needed repairs along there. Ultimately, we did do that work, but determined that it didn't make sense to undergo any repairs at that time. But what we did commit to internally was doing a full dive inspection in the fall. And so that was conducted in the fall of 2019. And we found, we did that along the Fishway and along the apron of the dam, and found some voids that we believe do necessitate some additional work along the Fishway in the short term. And so Justin Fletcher will talk in a little greater detail about what we found and then talk about the engineering design work that we've done and then the timing associated with doing that work. Justin, please.
Yeah.
Justin, if you're going to go to the map, why don't you use the mic there?
Okay.
So the Fishway was built in 1986, and when they were building the Fishway, at least this portion down here, they had a really difficult time keeping the area dewatered. So, and that's an issue when you're trying to place structural concrete on top of the soil. You got to try to keep the water out of your work area. So they, contractor used what's called a tremi concrete fill and placed it in the hole that had water in it. It spread out in this area. And once they had that in place, then they were able to put the structural footing for the Fishway on top of that. So the structural footing for the Fishway is highly reliant on the tremi concrete slab that was put in place during construction. And the divers, when they went out, they found that this, you can kind of see a jet of water that comes off the spillway, and then in the spring and summer, when the flows are really high, this jet is really impressive. And it's aimed right at the corner of the Fishway. And what it did was it undermined an area underneath that tremi concrete slab, and that was something the divers found and measured and took notes of. And, we think it's serious enough that we need to repair it as soon as we can. So we started preparing bid documents, and our intention was to try to do it this spring. But the Wenatchee River has been running about 4 times higher than it normally has this time of year. So it's a little bit too dangerous for divers to get out in the water and try to repair the Fishway before spring flows really hit. So we're currently bidding the work and planning to do it this fall. If you were to drive up this fall, you'll probably see cofferdam crest of the spillway, and then there'll be some work down in this area. And we anticipate it taking about 3 weeks to get finished. Our work window is sometime between November 1st and March 27th. We're going to fill the void with cementitious grout, so the contractor will place temporary formwork in the water, enclose the void area, and then pump grout. Durable repair for them. So they can continue to get beat on by the water coming off this spillway.
How far will that cofferdam go?
We're leaving it up to the contractor, but we're anticipating it'll probably go about here. They need to
divert the water.
Divert the water around their work area. And the cofferdam should be somewhere in the range of 2 to 3 feet.
Will there be any work done on that one corner that creates the jet of water?
No, not with this project. That'd be a pretty big undertaking to try to reroute flow around the corner of the dam. So we're going to take care of this issue, and that'll be something we study in the future. Can we make that a little better, I guess, to try to reduce the amount of scour damage?
I've seen the jet of water that comes off there, and that's very impressive.
The current estimate of this work is around $450,000. So it's been some time since we've been before you, so we just wanted to provide this update and see if you had any questions.
Commissioners, questions, comments, thoughts?
Just it'd be much appreciated if when that's going to happen, if you'd let, I'm sure Commissioner McKenna would be interested in knowing, and as would I, so we'd just run up and drive by and see what's going on. So.
Of course.
Yeah. I also would like to be aware of that.
All of us.
Come up and take a look at it during the construction.
Okay. Sounds good. Thank you.
Thank you.
And I just want to say this is an important safety modification. We're moving ahead with this. The overall review of the safety dam that we're going to have to look at over the longer term, too. We've talked about that in the past. And so more work to come on that at some point in the future.
Can any part of a copper dam be reused? I'm off.
Did you ask if the copper dam could be reused?
probably the kind that we're asking for. We're asking for it to be temporary. We think that if we were to leave a cofferdam in place, that it would affect fish passage. Fish enter the ladder. So we're telling the contractor in the contract documents that they need to remove the cofferdam.
Great, thank you.
Okay, next up, Kirk Hudson's going to come up and talk to us about getting our first turbine back online in 2020. First of what will be many.
It's going to refer to a graphic. Kirk Hudson, Managing Director of Generation and Transmission. Happy to report that C9, one of our large units at Rocky Reach, was returned to service on January 31st. And you might recall we're doing long-term repairs on units 8 through 11. And C9 being completed actually makes it, we are now halfway done. We've got C8 and C9 that have long-term repairs done. C10 and 11 still have fixed blades on them with blade blocks. So getting C8 and C9 done returns those to Kaplan service adjustable blade capability, which is great news. And C9 is one of actually 8 units that we are scheduled to bring back into service this year. So starting off the year well, January getting one of them. The next ones you'll see at Rocky Reach are, we're shooting for bringing C1, which is undergoing the trunnion bushing repairs. That'd be the first unit with the trunnion bushing repairs completed. We're shooting for the week of March 13th for that one to be done. And coincidentally as well, you see C3 out here until projected 2021. We're actually undergoing tests as we speak to see if we can return that one to service in the interim with the blades blocked hydraulically, so that instead of it sitting there down until 2021, we're looking for a way to get it back up in service temporarily till we can dive into it and replace the trunnion bushings. And then work is ongoing with 2 and 7 shortly after C1 is returned to service. So that's the update for Rocky Reach, and got a lot of work going on at Rocky Reach and at Rock Island as we speak. And down at Rock Island, just the first units we would expect this year to return back would be hopefully in short order. We've got B10 here at 2020. We're looking at March or April time frame, and maybe May. We'll know a lot more in the next couple of weeks. And then B4 would be shortly after that.
Wow. You must be looking at the same stream flow reports that we are, that it's gone up about 15% in the last month.
Yeah, we're getting these units ready to operate. Yeah, we'll try and keep these updated from time to time, but it does show all the various stages of each of the units and what's happening to each of them.
Very helpful. Thank you.
Yeah. Thank you.
Great.
Thank you.
Next up, John Stoll with an update on the customer information system that we talked about a little bit earlier today.
Good afternoon, Commissioners. So I think this is the third meeting in a row where we've had a little bit of a CIS update, and the good news is we went live 2 weeks ago. So, well, actually a little over a week ago. So, you know, all things considered, it went very smoothly. You know, I kind of tend to be a little cautious by nature and was expecting we'd have more issues or just things that would pop up, but the go-live weekend went very smooth. Made the decision on that Sunday, so then that Monday, they were doing back office transactions. Really appreciated that the office was closed, so really provided staff their first hands-on using the system, working queries, working lists, running the initial set of transactions through. So again, that went smooth. And then open for business on the Tuesday. And again, I just keep waiting for something to happen, but it's been it's gone very well. Now, that being said, there are things going on underneath the surface that you know you have to respond to and deal with. So just, you know, a couple ideas or examples of that. You know, a lot of these systems, when they bill or when you put in meter reads and things of that nature, there's exceptions that kick out based on historical usage. Is there something that says you might want to look at this? So that creates a work list or a queue. So taking a look at those, do they need to be refined? So maybe they're not getting so many, you know, because it's important to pay attention to the ones that do happen and not disregard them. You know, frankly, we've seen that happen in other utilities where they just kind of get overwhelmed with information coming at them. So that's an example of things that are being looked at. We do have one enhancement we had to put in is when we send over a service order for something like a connect up a new meter. And we do dozens of those field type activities. It's a little slow. It was a custom routine just by where we're at, and we're not full-blown AMI yet, so we're having to do this stopgap work deployment. So, no, that's just taking a little bit more time, but I know IT is working on that. One of the big things is people are just looking at the bills. They're scrutinizing them, looking at the file, you know, just making sure, trust but verify. So that's going on by, you know, many folks. There's just little things that tend to, you know, pop up again, but really have a lot of confidence in the team and appreciate their experience. Just to note, though, as we keep moving forward, you know, we're doing new bill cycles, new service cycles every day. Just, and, you know, we'll bring in new types of services. We'll soon be into frost protection, for example. So that'll kick off a new routine. And then you get to your second billing cycle once we've gone through the month. Then there's processes that look back and reconcile, for example, if there was an estimate that was made. So those are things, you know, you just really have to pay attention to and realize that, you know, until you really see that full year, I think you're still in this kind of watching the system very closely. We do have some things, some other enhancements, some developments. Some defects that were noted and just recognize that we could work around them and work through them, but those are on the list and there's dozens of them. So again, that just speaks to this, even though we're live and it's a big milestone and everybody felt really good, there's still a lot of work to be done, but it's ongoing. And again, a really good team that's working on it.
That's good. Commissioner's thoughts?
Well, just a question because I posed it a couple of weeks ago. Is the bulk of your team now on vacation?
No. Although, you know, Carrie Wendell has just worked morning, noon, and night, and she had an opportunity to get away for the weekend. I said, don't you dare, you know, take work with you. Just take a break from it. And, I think she did. So, but yeah, normally it's nice to bring her up here today, but, you know, they're busy doing stuff.
Yeah. Sounds great. Well, that's good. That's music to my ears.
Again, thank you for your support on this project.
Yeah, it's not Iowa.
Yeah, we're not ready for the app yet. No.
Yeah. Thanks, John.
Thanks.
That's it for our manager items today.
Okay, commissioners, we have commissioner items, and I actually have one of you perhaps have a comment, a motion to make under commissioner items?
Certainly.
Yeah.
I would move to reschedule the March 17th, 2020 board workshop to Friday, May 1st, 2020 at 9 a.m. at the Confluence Technology Center, 285 Technology Center Way in Wenatchee.
I'll second the motion.
It's been moved and it's been seconded. Any discussion?
I just want to thank everybody. I was the fly in the ointment. Yeah, that's what was coming. So I really, I know it's not easy to reschedule anything, and I had said I'll not attend and catch up later, and I think Steve insisted, nope, we change it. So thank you all for being accommodating.
You're quite welcome. So the all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? The ayes have it.
And, Mr. President, I have something. If I can quit coughing. I got an email from a customer up in the Leavenworth area, and she wanted to pass on two positive comments. One was that she really appreciates when she's driving around that that the she commented that the PUD staff, particularly the, I think probably the linemen, the guys that are out working on the poles, are really good, safe drivers, and they drive slowly. So I'll pass that on. And then the second comment was that she has a power pole right behind her house. She lives on the north, off the North Road, and that two different hawks have one has been killed and one. I'm not sure what happened to the second one, but anyway, she was very concerned because she's a bird watcher. She's an ornithologist, and the one that was killed was a really special hawk. It was a goshawk, and so she called to report that and said, first of all, it was a really, really efficient process to get through to the right person, and I asked her who she talked to, and she didn't know who she talked to. So I made some calls and worked with Aline, and we ran it down. It was... the gal's name is Stacy Lloyd. I'm looking here. Stacy Lloyd was who she worked with initially, and she said she was just great, really helpful, really understanding, and said she'd take care of it, and that they'd dispatch somebody to come up fairly soon to take a look at it and see what's going on. And then secondly, she worked with Kelly Cordell, who was actually there, came up and took a look at it, and said was amazingly helpful. So, and that customer is my sister. And so that's high praise from my sister. Kelly Cordell and Stacy Lloyd. So thank you.
Thanks for that, Anne. That's good. Well, if that's all the commissioner items, I think we're on to follow-up delegation items.
I had a few from the last meeting. So we got back to you on the... price per policy for the legislation on the insurance legislation that funds wildfire mitigation activities. I should have gotten an email from Tracy on the February 4th. And then there was one, there were two today having to do with how the rate increase applies to different levels of kilowatt hours of usage. So I drafted that email to you very early this morning and decided it was too early to send to you. And then I forgot about it, so I sent it to you at noon. So you now have it. And I think that's it from last week.
Okay, on to delegation from today.
Yeah, we're not sure. Actually, we only have one, and it's the one about the forecast. Do you want something on that? Or?
No, I think you're absolutely right. It would be difficult to impossible to, I think, create a roadmap. And what I was really looking for is just to verify the accuracy or the potential accuracy or the source, the best source forecasting. But I think my takeaway is that there isn't one.
Take it with a grain of salt. Always.
Yeah.
Okay, we're at that moment where we ask for additional public comment. And I see no public in the audience. Any matters of general business is like come before the board?
I have one item. I didn't think it would necessarily fit under commission items, but it did happen at Waputa last week, and I just think that with the staff that's here in the room, you've noted over the last several years the stable demeanor of our current board chair, Commissioner Arsenault. And I saw him in a total different state of mind at the PUD Association meeting. I've never seen him in a state of rapture before, but he discovered in the state treasurer's office a bond sale online. And I went into that room, and it was absolutely, totally quiet. Kelly, I see you with a thumbs up. And, you know, you could have, you know, you couldn't hear a pin drop, or you could hear a pin drop in that room because they were so intent on that, and it was just a totally different experience I've ever had with Commissioner Arsenault. So I just wanted to share that with the people in this room, and I guess the rest of the people that are listening to this recording. So anyway, he actually got us a good contact for the PUD Association in the Treasurer's Office in the process.
I have to admit that I found it to be ecstasy to be invited in and observe the sale of over, well, there are three different tranches, but the one I was looking at was over $200 million
Washington State fuel tax GOs. And I was always on the other side of that. I've never been on this side of it. And, of course, the technology is light years. I was pencil and paper, and their computer, completely different. But it was just absolutely fascinating. But as Commissioner Smith says, the offshoot of that is we were able to get make contact in the treasurer's office for a potential partnership for some utility dollars, utility tax dollars to partner up with through the state. So it worked out really well. But, yes, he was absolutely right. I was my jaw was down to my belly button watching this thing. I was a kid in a candy store. So, okay, having heard that, since that's the conclusion of any general business, I think what we should do is stand adjourned.